You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
At first, it looked like the Pacers' woes would continue in Charlotte on Monday night. In a first quarter that saw former IU star Cody Zeller score 10 points on a perfect 4-for-4 shooting, and then a miserable just 15-point second quarter had the Pacers trailing by 2 to the 15-23 Hornets at the half. It looked like the Pacers might be heading to their fifth loss in 6 games, but it all turned around in the second half as the Pacers scored 73 second-half points, including 36 points in total on the game from T.J. Warren, an 18-point, 12-rebound, and 7-assist game for Domantas Sabonis, and a great bench effort led by T.J. McConnell, who had 7 points and 7 assists. For the Hornets, they're led by Terry Rozier's 28 points, but his poor 3 of 10 shooting from 3 proved to be their kryptonite. They also had Devontae Graham, who had 22 points, and off the bench, Cody Zeller finished with 14. The Pacers, though, pulled it out, 115-104 over the Hornets. Welcome to Locked On Pacers Podcast. My name is Adam Friedman. As always, I'm the host of this wonderful show. On today's podcast, I'll bring you the good, the bad, and the ugly from the Pacers' win against the Hornets. And then we'll have a segment on the Pacers' turnover rate and their success keeping the ball. I will be the first one to admit in that first quarter, or really first half, it got a little dicey there for the Pacers. Aaron Holiday, who was probably the ugliest of any Pacer player tonight, was not playing well. The team was just looked kind of in a funk. It felt like they were going to have to kind of fight hard for this game, and I'm not sure I didn't feel like they had the fight in the moments in a way. I mean, with maybe a more hobbled T.J. McConnell, we didn't see the bench yet, at least in that first quarter, and just a starting unit that didn't seem to have it tonight. It really, really felt like this Pacer team was heading towards like just one of those ugly like 105-103 losses to the Hornets, which would have been really bad and kind of disheartening for this team, especially because that would have made 5 of 6. That would have been 2 to the Hornets, a team that they should be almost every time they play them. And so, really, if it wasn't for that just amazing second half, the whole narrative shifted in my opinion, right? So, and that's where you want to start with like the very good, the very best, the awesomest, and that is Mr. T.J. Warren himself. I believe it's Anthony Warren Jr., as he goes by from his parents. He had a superb game, probably his best game in a Pacer uniform. He single-handedly carried this team in the second half, at times in the third quarter, just making bucket after bucket, and especially in that fourth quarter when things were going to get close, he just found a way to keep scoring. I mean, I think he had 20 points, maybe 20, a little less heading into the fourth. He had a great fourth quarter, especially from like the 9-minute on. It was one of those nights where I know Tony and I talked about him on Monday's show, I think yesterday's podcast, where we're like, sometimes it feels like when they can't get a bucket, they just give the ball to T.J. Warren and he'll figure it out because he just, even though it looks weird and he takes these floaters and he, you know, gets contact and all this other stuff, he just seems to score. Like, he's just an efficient enough scorer. So there are nights where he's just miserable and you kind of can feel that. But tonight was not that night. Tonight was a night where he felt like he had his A game on. And he brought it last time against the Hornets, too. I think he had 30 or 29 last time the Pacers played them, in Charlotte at least. I just thought, you know, this is the kind of game where you're like, oh yeah, that's why they have T.J. Warren. That's why he's super valuable. That's why I think he's making a case to be an all-star, especially if Siakam continues to miss games. It's going to be an extra forward spot, but now he might not get it. Don't get me wrong. There are plenty of guys who are worthy at that forward spot. I mean, you know, when you look at kind of the list of honorable mentions after you get rid of Siakam and, you know, the Jalen and the Boston guys and Jalen and Tatum, but he's really making a case to be one of the forwards on this Eastern Conference roster, especially if he's put up these 30-point games. He hasn't missed a game this year. I mean, that's his durability has been key to his Pacer team, just everything. And tonight's one of those nights where you're like, oh, yeah, the Pacers got T.J. Warren for free, and that's just amazing. Another good, I love Sabonis tonight. I thought he was just extremely impactful, right? So he played the most minutes. He played 38. He got a little bit of a spell on the bench from Goga in the first half, but not really anything in the second half. I'm not sure how many minutes he played in the second half total. I don't have that in front of me, but this was the kind of game where you're like, oh, this is what Sabonis could be, right? So I think a lot of, you know, before we saw the Turner-Sabonis pairing, and I think it works, so I think that's where you get different, but like, it was like Sabonis could almost be this like passing big man. Like, it's happened the past couple years ago where off the double team, right, Sabonis is a 4-on-3. He has the ability to go to the rim and score, shoot a jumper, or pass it. And tonight's the kind of night where you're like, oh, he could be the kind of guy who could put up like an 18-12-5 stat line. Tonight was 18-12-7. he's that. I mean, he only had two turnovers. When he sees the court a certain way, he is he's one of the best centers in the league. I mean, at least offensively, he's a triple threat at times, and we haven't seen that much yet. This probably is one of his top assist game of the year, but when he is rolling and he really, you know, is really making that extra pass, that's when he's at his best. I mean, I think sometimes he gets too, I'm trying to think the right word, he gets too stubborn around the rim where he gets the ball in the post because he has to score. And I think, you know, if he realizes that he can kind of get the ball at the 10-foot spot in the hoop, maybe go try to make a spin in the rim, and if he doesn't have a shot, just kick it out. I mean, you know, I don't know how many times I can watch the bonus just throw the ball at the back of the rim sometimes. And so, you know, I don't think him taking, I think his average this year taking is like 14 shots per game. Maybe that's right where he should be, but it feels like, you know, when he takes 11 shots, he could be a much more efficient player, and he can use the threat of his ability to go to the rim and back people down and make those plays that kick out, you know, out passes all the way to the corner to guys like Warren or Lamb or whoever's playing with, you know, the bench guys and Doug McDermott, stuff like that. So this is kind of the best I think we saw of Sabonis. It's kind of what I would consider kind of a peak Sabonis. And I thought that was good to see because he needed it, right? With Brogdon out, you're missing basically 8 assists per game. You know, obviously Holiday steps in and puts up 5 of those, but you need somebody, you know, to step in and kind of be that distributor that you don't have. You know, you don't need, you know, with Warren and Lamb, you know, let's give credit, they both each had 3 and 4 assists apiece, but they tend to be guys who get the ball and just shoot, right? They tend to just make a play, and it works. For Warren tonight, it was like, oh, it was working. I mean, there's nothing wrong with what was going on there. And Aaron Holiday would be the same way. Aaron Holiday can be a stubborn player who just shoots too much, and then when his is off like he was tonight, it's just miserable. So you need guys who are like, okay, I don't really care about scoring 20, 30 points. I care about, you know, putting up, you know, what's the best way for us to win, the most efficient way for us to win. And that's why you need a guy like Sabonis and kind of to fill that role tonight. And I think he did. And again, he also just made kind of a push for being an all-star. I think he's probably the lock right now on the Pacers team. Well, they get a second one, which I don't think they will, but if Warren puts up a couple more 30-point nights, we'll definitely see. So some bad, I guess, was that Justin Holiday being thrown out of the game was just kind of BS. I mean, I don't know if he had been chirping. You know, we didn't see it for the, you know, for way too long. I mean, it felt like it was kind of a short whistle, but he wasn't wrong. He had a very grievance to make that there was basically what they called him for. He wasn't getting the call on the other end of the floor. And, you know, it was didn't affect the game. It didn't hurt the team. Actually allowed Warren to come back in and carry the team in the fourth quarter, so it didn't really matter. But I thought it was funny because Justin Holiday is not a very, you know, vocal guy. I mean, you know, I think every player, you know, complains they don't get the calls and whatnot, but I don't think you ever see Justin Holiday as the kind of guy who's just like, you know, barking nonstop at a ref. So to see him get thrown out is kind of hilarious. And I saw, Derek at Pacers blog that was the first Pacers thrown out of a game this year. So Justin Holiday wins the award for the first Pacer to be kicked out, so good for him. I mean, I will say that's one thing the Pacers, I think, is missing is that feistiness. And I don't know if Sabonis maybe has it, maybe, but like it feels like this team is, I don't want to call them soft because I don't think that's the right word, but they don't have that like in-your-face kind of wild card player like Lance used to be that way. And not that they need it, but I think a lot of the good teams need a guy who just like, you're almost not, I don't think afraid of is the right word, but a guy who will get in your face in a moment and kind of be like, you know, the defender. You know, if somebody wants to knock Vic down pretty hard, you know, who would come over and sort of try to beef up. And Sabonis might be that guy. I mean, you know, I don't know what his personality is like. He doesn't feel like that, but they don't have that guy yet. And so I think that's kind of interesting. They only had one guy thrown out of a game this year, which is kind of interesting to me. Let's see, what else do I think is... So I thought another bad real fast was just the way Cody Zeller abused him in that first quarter. Man, they just... Like I said, that first quarter was... I mean, if it wasn't really for that 5-point run, the end of the first quarter basically by TJ McConnell, and I think McDermott had a 3 there too, it felt like the team would be down like 7 at the end of the first. They had a second quarter that couldn't score. Luckily, Hornets couldn't score either, so it was fine. And it just felt like this team, like I said, was heading to like a 198 loss or a 102-100 loss. But they pulled together, so give them credit for that. They did pull it together and figure it out. But, yeah, I mean, Cody Zeller, that first quarter could get whatever he's won. Obviously, they figured it out eventually. But it's weird. I mean, they didn't give up. So the number, I think, for this game that was good because it was something they needed to work on was they won the rebound battle and they won the offensive rebounding battle, right? So they had 12 offensive rebounds versus the Hornets 8. That had been kind of the key discussion topic, right, for probably the past week that they just were getting destroyed in the glass. And I honestly think it was like the centers, but it was the guards, right? So let's, you know, Turner stepped up, he had nine rebounds, but Jeremy Lamb had 10 rebounds, which was huge for him. McConnell had 3. I know that's probably the par for McConnell. You know, Warren had 5. That's probably the par for him. But, you know, somebody like Jeremy Lamb should be able to have 10 rebounds. They clearly made an emphasis in practice that the guards have to be attentive on those three-point shots and not just cutting basically for the other, you know, cutting or trying to go play like a get a fast break point. They need to be getting the rebound because, honestly, that's been part of the problem is that it feels like the centers are taking out of the play because Turner's out in the corner. It's a bonus or something. Simone's out in the corner and Turner gets dragged off the hoop. And then they kick out, shoot a three. And then you have Lamb and Warren already trying to get down to create offense when – you know, they're not crashing the glass, and the point guards for the other teams, you know, the Terry Rozier's or the Devontae Graham's are getting rebounds. And they, you know, I mean, Rozier only had one rebound. That was huge for them. I mean, obviously, Bridges had seven, but it felt like there was nothing out of the ordinary. It wasn't like a crazy rebounding night from anybody. The first quarter, Zeller had a couple, but after that, it didn't feel like there was any. It really didn't. It just felt like it was a normal night, and I think that's a testament to the way the Pacers have been coaching that and been trying to, and I think they're making an emphasis. Hopefully, we'll see it translate later in the week when they play Miami, which, you know, that's the last time they gave a ton of offensive rebounds in that game last time. Well, really at the end of the game. But I think that was something that was encouraging. I think really the second half for me was the most good. That's where I think I want to end it. Again, it covered up, I would say, I don't want to say they played terrible in the entire Denver game, but I'd say the last two quarters were pretty miserable. The last four of the Atlanta were pretty miserable. And then the first two, so it basically covered up an eight-quarter stretch with the Pacers. I thought we're heading in a direction where it's like, oh, this team might not be able to, you know, win 50 games. I think right now they're on pace to win 50, maybe even a little more. So it felt that way. But, you know, when this team is back against the wall, they always seem to pull it out. And I think that's what makes this kind of team exciting because, you know, they're down their best two players. You got Justin Holiday gets thrown out of the game. You got McConnell, who looked fine, but I've had a scare injury. That's a bonus. He got a little bit hurt, but he seemed fine too. So I guess that's not a big deal with him either. But this team's back against the wall. And they, you know, managed, you know, a Charlotte team who isn't good by any means, but they're not, like, terrible. They're not just, like, you know, if this had been, you know, the Hawks are terrible. That's a terrible loss. The Hornets are an okay team, but to come and pull this game out on the road is good, is encouraging. You know, this is what this team does, and this is why, this is, you know, it's the Indiana way anyway, right? They kind of system in guys. You know, we got a T.J. Warren, a guy who everybody, you know, has been screaming that either is not good, and he's a good stats, bad team guy, but he comes to Indiana, and he just, you know, makes big plays when they need to, and that's what this team does the best, and it's why it's exciting time to be a Pacer fan, because I think we're heading to a three-week stretch probably without Vic, but then we're heading to a point where this is going to get really exciting when everybody returns and get healthy. We're going to see this team at full peak capacity, and that could we can see something special the next, you know, year and a half between that. So let's take one quick break, and I want to talk about the Pacers' turnover rate. Welcome back in to Locked On Pacers podcast. So I don't know if this will surprise anybody, and maybe it will, maybe it won't, but the Pacers are one of the... Okay, the Pacers lead the league in assist turnover rate at 1.99, slightly ahead of the Phoenix Suns, who have a 1.97. They're one of three teams in the 1.9 for that, you know, assist turnover ratio. But more importantly, I think it's more interesting, is they are the second lowest turnover team in the league. So why does this matter? Why is it important? That's a good question. You know, I was just kind of digging around the rabbit hole for some stats to see, but I think this stat is a good indication of how well this team is coached and how, because they are deficient in other areas of the game, they don't take as many threes, right? So they're the lowest. They're 29th in three-point shot attempts at 28 a game, roughly. The fact that they overcompensate with twos by taking, you know, the second most in the league. And, you know, they have a good field goal percentage in both twos and threes. That helps. But a team that's, you know, ranked dead last in free throws attempted, their saving grace right now has been the ability to just be efficient with the ball and not turn over. I think that's the right way to put it. I mean, they're not a team forcing a ton of turnovers. I mean, they rank middle of the pack at you know, opponents are averaging about 14.4 turnovers. That ranks 19th in the league. But the interesting thing about the turnover thing is it's the one thing that Pacers actually like kind of are dominant in the league. I mean, the two-point shot things and the percentages are kind of where they've always been. They've always been kind of a top five percentage team. But it's all about the Pacers being an efficient offensive team, right? So I think the one thing that is the kind of, you know, they play this weird style, right? I think we all can agree. They play this, you know, two-point heavy, take an open shot, you know, especially with the team they have now, it's like, well, Warren Lamb, you know, create space and shoot the 8-foot shot that you can make at a good rate, right? So, and, you know, McConnell's the same way. He shoots a lot of, you know, I would say 6 to 8 foot shots and Sabonis down in the post and all this stuff. I mean, there are certain guys, certainly McDermott takes a lot of threes, and so does Turner for especially a guy his size. And, you know, I think Brogdon, you know, takes a good amount of threes. Actually, Turner leads the team in 3-point attempts, which is an awesome stat, by the way. Just bank that for the side. But what makes the Pacers so good, or makes them, you know, at the level where their success. I mean, I don't think so good because they're not, you know, one of the best three teams in the league. They're that kind of next pack. But what keeps this team alive is the fact that they run just this most, like, I wouldn't even call it precision, but this efficient offense that it is really reliant on us, you know. And you can see it, you know, it used to be Darren Collison who led the league in this turnover ratio 1 year and was like, if you did some, like, advanced, it was one of the most efficient flunkers in the league for minutes played. You know, they just run this really efficient offense that leads to success and leads to making up for a team when they, you know, taking 43s or whatever. And then, you know, it's how they're able to, you know, to score 115 points, for example, tonight, right? So in a game where they took 26 threes, they took 14 free throws. I mean, none of those are, like, extremely high numbers, but they shot 52% and they turned over the ball just 10 times, right? This team has this weird ability to just be like a super almost efficient, and I mean, just like, it's almost like they found the one loophole in this whole, you know, offensive, you know, 3-point explosion, right? So, like, it felt like every team to win or to be good or compete, it was like high pace, a lot of 3-point shots, and that leads to, you know, more opportunities, which leads you to winning, and right, and that style works if you have a really, really good player, right? If you have a Steph Curry, if you've got a Giannis, if you have a James Harden, right? Then you see all these teams copycat it, and they don't have the players, right? So, like, the Kings were the Kings at this, right? They would run this super high-paced offense, and they would shoot a ton of threes, and they just didn't have the players for it. They were playing three centers at times or something like that. Or the Pelicans, you know, without Davis, I guess they weren't doing as much, but I felt like they were doing it with Davis, who doesn't quite fit that offense as well. Or, I mean, the Nets were also really, you know, king of this, right? And until they got good players, it didn't work. Until they got D'Angelo Russell kind of level player, and they got Kyrie now, it didn't really work, right? But the Pacers decided, you know, they looked at the league, and they did it. It's an innovative way. I mean, you could say it's an innovative way to be mediocre, right? Instead of looking at the league and figure out how how to become the best team, figure out how do I become the 8th best team, which is a fair way to put it. But I think as we head into kind of this new decade, you know, every decade there's a team, right? A surprise finals winner. I think you can go down the list and you get it every time. From, I think you look at the 99 Spurs, the 04 Pistons, the 11 Mavs, the 83 Sixers, and that might not be the most surprising one, but there's always a surprising team or a team that in the decade that kind of is the outlier, right? I mean, I guess the Spurs beginning of the dynasty, and that makes sense, but at the time it was surprising. Certainly, this person has not proven and won, right? The Pistons had a great 3 or 4 year run where they were, I think, one of the best teams in the East, and they really don't get credit for being kind of the semi-dynasty they were, because they never got that second championship in that LeBron year where he just annihilated them in that playoff series. It's going to haunt them forever because they were going to a third game against the Spurs and would have been that, like, third time matchup, and it would have been the rubber match or the chance to kind of get revenge that game 7 from 0-5. But the Mavs obviously beating the Heat was the most surprising. Like, there's always a team that surprises because of something wonky or weird, you know, injuries break their way, or, you know, they just figure out a way that, you know, they catch the end of a dynasty team, like, you know, we're going to catch with the Lakers here in a couple years, and they figure out how to upset that team in the right moment and whatnot, right? And not saying the Pacers are going to be that team or could be that team, but I think that's what this team is, like, its hope is, right, is to be that team, is to be the team. An injury, you know, an injury happens to a team, and then they end up, you know, drawing one of the best teams ever, but they catch them at the end of their run, and they end it, right? And I think the innovation, and I know it's weird to call it innovation, but the fact that you have a front office and a coaching staff who look at the landscape and think, how do I do stuff differently, is kind of a good thing in that, right? So, I mean, the Raptors are maybe not the best example, but, right, they looked at the landscape and they said, well, we're doing this and we could be okay, but how do we do this differently, right? They, you know, who would have thought you would trade, you know, when you're a consistent 50-win team, 59 games, you would trade your arguably best player for Kawhi Leonard for a rental, because you looked at that team and said, how do I win now, right? So the Pacers team we see now, and I truly believe this, is not the team that we're going to see in 3 years when I think is going to be their peak, right? So in 3 years, we're talking a 30-year-old Oladipo, I think a 29-year-old Brogdon, a 27-year-old Sabonis and Turner, and they're all going to be kind of on the same. They're assuming Vic resigns. Now, that's a big if, but let's be real there. But looking at a team that's kind of all kind of set up, and I think they're going to have the ability to look around the landscape and say, okay, we're a good team. You know, we've been to two conference semis and one is conference finals in the last 3 years. Let's just hypothetical, right? But because of the team's innovation and willing to look at the league and say, they're zigging this way, how do we zag the other way? That will become important and will become valuable to this team's success, I guess, in the future. And I know it's weird to kind of loop back but tie it, but it to me, it goes back to this weird way where the Pacers run this like oddly efficient offense to, instead of running this, you know, they rank 24th in pace right now, right? Instead of running this like, you know, high pace 3-point shooting, because they have the players, right? Think about it. There's a world where the Pacers basically team is, I'm thinking of it the right way. So it's like they, you know, they ship Sabonis out and the team ends up being, you know, Miles Turner, TJ Warren, Jeremy Lamb, Aaron Holiday, Victor Oladipo, right? That's a team. That could have been a possibility, right? And that team is just running, you know, Aaron Holiday is running, you know, sprints down the court half the time. You got Vic just shooting threes. And that team probably would be okay. I mean, you know, you have Turner taking 6 threes a game, and you have all these guys just shooting a ton of threes, and maybe, you know, Brogdon's in there too, but then it's, you know, Brogdon replacing Lamb in a way, right? That is certainly a possibility. But instead the team looked at the landscape and said, so for us to win, we have to figure out how to be efficient. We have to figure out how to get efficient shots. And so they looked at it and said, so what's a bonus? You know, a guy who was a attritional center, but is a very efficient player, is worth having the team. He didn't turn over the ball a ton. Now he's not. He certainly is. Will turn over the ball a little more than I think I'm comfortable with from a center at times. You know, he doesn't have. But in terms of, he's a guy who just can make the, is an efficient shooter, can get the offensive rebounds and kind of that kind of thing. And they looked at that lens and said, that works. And then, okay, what also works is putting guy TJ Warren at the three instead of, you know, playing Turner at the four. And we don't need Turner to take, you know, 7 threes a game. We even take 4 or 5. We don't need our guys taking a ton of threes. We should look at where the efficient spots in the zones are, right? How do we break down a defense, stuff like that? And it's just, to me, it's interesting, and I don't know. I think it's the kind of innovation that is, I get. Sometimes you say, well, that's just the 8-seed innovation, right? You know, but forever that was the Raptors, right? You know, they were this team that you knew what they were. They were an assistant team that made, you know, a couple of conference finals, conference semis here and there, but they couldn't go over the hump, right? But they were a team that was just innovative enough. They were doing just enough to hang around. They were waiting for their moment to strike, and I think that's where the Pacers are at and are going to get at. And I think the next 3 years are going to have a certain, you know, they're going to be fun in times of resident sure. They won 50-plus games for 3-plus years, but I think this team is going to be that piece away, and I hopefully think there's enough, you know, wherewithal and creativity in the front office and the coaching staff to say, okay, well, now there's that guy, right? That's where we can, you know, we can go get that player, and that will put us right over the hump, and we'll bet it all for 1 year, because winning one championship in Indiana is like Toronto is like winning seven. I mean, really, if the Pacers get one championship in people's lifetimes, that'll be enough, right? I don't think Pacer fans are greedy and think we need 3 or 4 or whatever. No, I think Colts fans can be that way, and I certainly could be as a Colts fan. It's like, well, we already won once. We need to win like 3 more times, but like, one Pacer championship is enough, in my opinion. So I'd love to hear your guys' thoughts on this. I know I kind of veered that topic off from where it was from the start, but I think, I don't know, I thought it was worth having, and you know, it's we got a big game coming against Miami next, so Tony will preview that podcast. You can share your thoughts with me either at Freedom Adam 5 or at the Locked On Pacers podcast. You can follow Tony at T East NBA, and we will see you guys again tomorrow.